Hello and welcome to the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. I'm Ralph Russo, college football writer with the Associated Press. The NFL draft is about a week away, so joining me on the show is my AP colleague, NFL writer Rob Motti. Rob's latest mock draft is out. He is anticipating a pretty wild round one with multiple trades and lots of quarterbacks going in the top 10. We'll talk to Rob about what happens after Caleb Williams goes to the Bears and why this is a draft where you don't want to be looking for help on defense early. We'll post Rob's latest mock draft in the show notes. And you can also find him and his work at apnews.com, where you can find my stuff as well. Thanks for listening to the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. You can find us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, just about anywhere you like to get your pods. If you like what you hear, please, please, please give us a good review and rating. It helps college football fans find us. It helps us find more college football fans. And away we go. Joining me this week on the podcast, my esteemed colleague, the great Rob Motti from the Associated Press. He's the NFL writer around these parts. Rob, man, always good to talk to you. This is the time of the year when your job and my job overlap a little bit as far as the NFL draft. You got it coming up.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, in about 10 days here. And you have your latest mock draft out. And I thought it would be a good idea to sort of just run through that. Now, I'm gonna mention every pick. We're not gonna break down every pick because I wanted to talk to you more about some specific picks, but also some trends. And the cool thing is, you went a little nuts on your mock draft, your latest, which I'll post in the show notes, and I already tweeted out. 8 trades in this mock draft, but more and more we're seeing these very active first rounds with where a lot of trading goes on. I want to start with this though. Obviously, you have Caleb Williams going number one. You got 4 quarterbacks in the first round. Actually, I think you have 5. I think you have Penix in the first round, too.
Yeah.
So can you explain to people who maybe follow the NFL but maybe don't understand the inner workings of roster building and like why quarterbacks essentially get overdrafted? Because I think you probably talk to enough people who will tell you J.J. McCarthy might not be the 8th best or the 5th best prospect, but the quarterbacks get overvalued, and it ties into finances. So give us a little explanation as to why quarterbacks become overdrafted annually.
Yeah, it comes down to exactly what you said, Ralph. It comes down to finances, because if you can build a winning team, a championship caliber team, while that quarterback is still on his rookie contract, that's how you can supplement and build around him and have the pieces in to where you can sustain that success. And we've seen teams that have been able to carry that a little bit over. Kansas City's a special situation with Patrick Mahomes. They gave him a new contract, which at the time was massive and the biggest in sports. But if you can win while that QB is still on his rookie quarterback, like the Eagles a couple years ago were able to get to a Super Bowl with Jalen Hurts as a second round pick under contract before they re-upped him. And now you see that they're in position where they have to make cost-cutting moves, salary cap type issues, because they gave him that big salary. So that's why you see teams taking a chance, leaping into the top 5 if they have to, doing whatever it takes to get a quarterback early and hoping he pans out. And what we've seen, Ralph, as you well know, is there's not a lot of patience with these QBs.
Yeah, that was the next thing I was going to ask about. Yeah.
Yeah. You look at the guys drafted in 21, the Justin Fields and the Mac Jones. Hey, it's 2 years and you're out. Whereas years ago, we would see these guys get opportunity after opportunity, and teams are just running out of patience and going, hey, that didn't work out, let's move on to the next one.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing. It's not even that there's low patience, but they're willing to have, okay, we're just going to draft another high quarterback, right? Like, I think in the past, you might have almost felt like teams would be like, well, we got kind of burned, so maybe we'll try a veteran. But now it's becoming more likely. We're seeing this possibly with the Giants. Daniel Jones is not a really young quarterback, but you mentioned the Patriots of like, hey, it's 2 years, and the Bears, obviously the best example. We're not just like bailing on the last guy we drafted high. We're going for another young guy.
Yeah, and in the Bears case, I look at a guy like Justin Fields, and I think he's still got potential to be very special, to be a player in this league who can win a lot of games for a team. And I thought it was a tremendous opportunity for the Steelers. Basically stole him from the Bears. They gave him away, a conditional late-round pick, and he gets an opportunity to go to Pittsburgh. Russell Wilson's in there on a one-year deal, and if Russell doesn't work out, they still got to make a decision on Justin's contract, but he could see the field sooner rather than later and end up being a superstar player. He's got potential to maybe be even better than Caleb Williams, but it didn't work out in Chicago. They didn't surround him with the players, the talent around him that he needed, and now they'll end up with Caleb Williams, and they got to hope that he's a slam dunk home run as the number one overall pick.
Right, and they need to do a better job supporting Caleb than they did Justin Fields. It looks like they may be in position to do that with a different coach and some more weapons around them, but we'll see, because that ends up becoming a big part of this conversation too. As a Jets fan who's watched, listen, I think Zach Wilson has brought a lot of this on himself with his own flaws, but they also haven't done the best job of supporting Zach Wilson, and that's a story for another time in another podcast. So you have Caleb Williams going number one. That's kind of a slam dunk. The next big question is it two quarterbacks next? Is it three quarterbacks next? And what the order is? I think as a college guy, there has been this idea really going back to before last season that Caleb and Drake May are 1 and 1A. Caleb kind of separated himself. He's clearly number one. And now it's like, is it Drake May from North Carolina? Is it Jaden Daniels? There's still this J.J. McCarthy, you know, situation, which we'll talk about. You have, and again, you get right into it. Well, actually, you have going second, Jaden Daniels to Washington as opposed to Drake May. And again, like, I think that's only a surprise to people like me who really deeply cover college football. Jaden Daniels was not really on the radar last year as a high first round pick, ended up winning the Heisman, was a brilliant player for LSU. So Drake May maybe falling to number three or four isn't major slippage, but there had been this idea that Drake was about even with Caleb, and it's apparently that's switched as the draft process has gone on.
Well, Ralph, I still think there's a possibility it can go either way. I don't know that the Commanders are – this can come down to a 51-49 split in the room. And you look back at last year where Carolina went Bryce Young over C.J. Stroud, and after 1 year, it didn't work out. We don't know long-term, but that wasn't a 90-10, 100%. There were people in that room who, no matter what they say now, really thought they wanted C.J., and I think this could be the case here. I went with Jaden Daniels because I think he's a fit for Cliff Kingsbury, the offensive coordinator for Washington, who had success in Arizona with a dual threat quarterback in Kyler Murray, and Jaden Daniels is more of that dual threat guy that we see now in the NFL. You could look in the NFC East and see Philly having success with Jalen Hurts. You see Patrick Mahomes, you see Buffalo and Josh Allen, who's a big, tough guy, but can run the football and score touchdowns and get big first downs with his legs. So that's why I gave Washington or gave Daniels a little bit of an edge and sent him to Washington just because of the fit that I think in today's NFL. And I don't know that Drake May isn't going to be a better first round pick or first round NFL quarterback long term. But this is what we have to do, right, with this mock draft. And you got to take chances. That's part of why I went crazy. First one and second one, I was like, I'll go straight down. No trades. Third one, I saved them all. I went with the eight trades, as you already outlined.
And as you said, number three, you have a trade here, which is an interesting one, especially if it comes about because we know Minnesota's been eyeing quarterbacks to replace Kirk Cousins. Again, it goes back to this idea of, hey, we're just going to get a cheap guy, and we might throw him straight in there. And I know they signed Sam Darnold maybe to be a bit of a – they signed Darnold, right, to be a bit of a buffer. The Vikings.
Yeah, it'd be a bridge quarterback, 1 year deal, $10 million.
Yeah, possibly. But, you know, again, today's day, if the new guy comes in and plays well, he's going to start. And there's been a lot of talk about McCarthy or going to the Vikings. But if they trade up, you have them taking Drake May. And again, I do think that there's been a lot of buzz around McCarthy with the Vikings. And New England would be trading back. they're also eyeing quarterbacks. So that would be a super interesting one. Again, you know, I mean, we're trying to play the game here and plan this and sort of project out what might happen. And there's a lot of variables, but you seem pretty confident that the Vikings are going to go quarterback one way or the other.
Yeah, and in my first two, I had them staying put and or working out a way to get a quarterback. And I just feel J.J. McCarthy, who's gotten a ton of in this pre-draft era, like getting all this hype, I don't see him being a third overall pick. I don't think he's a top five player, top five quarterback, notwithstanding Jim Harbaugh saying he's the best QB in the draft. Obviously, he's got a little bit of a bias there. So I have Minnesota trading up with New England, who is just a bad football team that needs pieces, that needs assets. So if they can move back from three, get that number 11 pick, get that number 23 pick, and in my scenario, they also get a 2025 first rounder. So you got to match up all the points. You know how it works out with the points, and each pick is worth X amount of value. So I actually enjoyed that process of it, trying to match them up nicely. And Minnesota gets Drake May here at number three to be the guy to step in and replace Kirk Cousins. And I have New England dropping back to 11 and 23, but then still getting their quarterback, as we'll discuss, when they move up.
So the interesting thing here, too, with New England, and let's just stick on New England. So the next, just to give people an idea, again, we're not going to like dive into every pick, but I'll do this. At number four, Rob's got the Bills trading up with the Cardinals. Now, that sounds like another situation where you have a team that has a specific need, still thinks of itself as a contender, and the Cardinals may need some more pieces, quote unquote, right? I think the Cardinals probably find themselves in a little bit more of a wider rebuild. The Bills take Marvin Harrison. That would be pretty cool to see Josh Allen matched up with Marvin Harrison. This is a great receiver draft. So even if you couldn't trade all the way up to get Harrison, Neighbors and Adunze, who you have coming right after Harrison, essentially, Neighbors to the Chargers and Rome Adunze to the Giants. Again, it's a great receiver draft, but that Bills pick is pretty interesting because, again, like the Bills window, I think a lot of people look at some of the roster purges they made because of the cap and think, man, is the window closing there? But I guess if you got Josh Allen, you can't think that way.
Yeah, exactly. And you trade a number one wideout in Stephon Diggs, who may have been somewhat of a headache to the team in the locker room. And in order to do this, this is a blockbuster deal. Like going from 11 to 3 is one thing. Going from 28, where the Bills are, to number 4 is going to take a lot. So I have them sending 28, a second rounder, a fourth, a fifth. They're basically trading the whole draft. And then a 2025 first and second to Arizona for this pick number 4. And what I thought was interesting, Ralph, is we're seeing Marvin Harrison Jr. Because he skipped some of the offseason workouts, some mock drafts have him slipping behind Neighbors, who's been a offseason sensation in all of these workouts. And I just feel like what I heard CJ Stroud say the other day is dead on. Marvin Harrison has great tape. Like, I don't care what he does at the combine or any of the pro days, just look at the kid's tape for the past 3 years. And we know his genes. He's the son of a Hall of Famer. So if Buffalo is going to make a deal and move up to number 4, Marvin Harrison Jr. for me is the guy. And even if they don't, like at this number 4, I believe he's going to be the first wide receiver off the board. But from your perspective as a college guy, is that gap between Harrison and Neighbors that close to where Neighbors has surpassed him for some people?
You know, it is weird because I think it is a little recency bias. Neighbors was tremendous last year with Daniels, and Rome Odunze has been a very good, very consistent player for Washington and then really broke out last year. So I think I understand looking at the production from last year and saying, oh, these guys look maybe closer than we thought. Right. And again, as you said, with Harrison sitting out a lot of the process. But I also think back to seeing Harrison as a freshman, where he was playing on a stacked Ohio State team that still had, if I remember correctly, I think Olave and Wilson might still have been on that team. But Ohio State is always stacked at receiver. Right.
Yeah.
But even back then, like, you saw him get on the field as a freshman, and you're like, this guy is totally different. And his sophomore year, he was even in some ways had better numbers and put up better stats than his junior year. I think actually by last year, I don't want to say he, because he played great in some of their biggest games, so I don't want to say he played bored, but I also think like they were being careful with him and only using him when they really, unleashing him when they really needed him. So I kind of look at the entire body of work in college and think, yeah, that guy who I remember seeing as a freshman who looked very different, I'm going to bank on that guy. I do think Neighbors and Odunze make a good case for being top 10 picks, but I'm kind of with you. I almost feel like we have come to take for granted how great Harrison was as a college player because maybe his last year wasn't his best year statistically.
Exactly. And that's why I go with Harrison. And then I think Neighbors goes right after him to the Chargers, Ralph, because this is a team that needs playmakers around Justin Herbert. I thought it originally it was going to be offensive line. That was pre-free agency. Then Keenan Allen and Mike Williams are gone, and they need somebody to step in there. And if Neighbors went four, then it's Harrison at five. If Harrison goes four, like I believe he will, then it's Neighbors at five to the Chargers, a guy who's got elite ball skills, physical receiver, can be a playmaker that the Chargers can team up with Justin Herbert and get some instant offense. Even though Jim Harbaugh is going to run the football and he's going to look to do that, the way to win a lot of games in the NFL is you got to be efficient passing the ball. And that's why I go Neighbors next to the Chargers. And then Rome Odunze to the Giants at six, who haven't had a big-time stud wide receiver since Odell Beckham Jr.
Right. And then number seven, and this is going to be, and this is actually maybe the topic I'll sit on here for a second. This is going to be an offensive first round. In fact, I was doing a little research. The latest a defensive player has ever gone in the first round, the first defensive player off the board is number eight. J.C. Horn, a couple of years ago, was number eight to the, you know, in 2021. We might get that this year. Now, the Bears and the Falcons have some defensive needs. You have the Bears taking a defensive player, the first defensive player at nine. But wide receivers and offensive tackles at number seven, you have the first offensive tackle going off the board, and that's Joe Alt, who I think is one of these, like, super, not just a really good pick, but super safe pick. Like, I can't imagine a world where that guy's not starting. Right. Even if he's not a perennial Pro Bowler, you just think like that guy's going to be a guy you're going to stick in his position. He's going to start for a while. Worst case scenario, you have a solid starter, the Notre Dame offensive tackle. But it really is a draft where if you're looking for defense, you might be in some trouble, like immediate help on defense, because there's so many offensive linemen and wide receivers that are going to come off the board here.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of edge rushers, Ralph, who are first-round caliber picks, and we have them in later on in the draft going. But like you said, instant offense, guys who are going to step in and play right away. We made the case for why quarterbacks are such a popular top 10 pick, first-round picks, and then wide receivers as well. But offensive linemen, it's an offense. There's a lot of O linemen, it's a deep draft. I see so many of these guys going in the first round. And Joe Alt from Notre Dame being the safest, as you said, he's 6'9", 321. Yet he's got the genes. There's a lot of players, Ralph, in this draft whose fathers played in the NFL. Harrison, Alt, Brendan Rice, Jerry Rice's son.
Yeah,
we've got Chris Jenkins. We've got Jeremiah Trotter Jr. So there, Frank Gore Jr. There's a lot of guys who are going to come later on, and it'll be day two and day three picks. But yeah, Joe Alt to me is a safe pick for a team in Tennessee that gave up the most sacks in the AFC last year. You put him in there to protect Will Levis's blind side and give Will Levis an opportunity to prove whether or not he can be their franchise quarterback going forward.
Right, because that's the thing. You're either drafting a quarterback or you're drafting support for your quarterback, right? To a certain degree, like the number one thing you need is a quarterback. The number two thing you need is we got to support these quarterbacks. So let's get him a guy who can catch the ball and get him somebody, or get him somebody who can block for his blind side. So we get to 8, New England, and this is the last one I'm going to kind of sit on for a bit, because you have basically the Patriots trading way down, or trading a couple of times, excuse me, not way down, but trading a couple of times, trading out of their original position to move down, then trading back up with the Falcons to grab their quarterback, J.J. McCarthy. And again, J.J.'s an interesting guy. You mentioned it. Like, really talented guy, former 5-star recruit. But the fact of the matter is, like, some people say, well, Harbaugh was trying to hide him or trying to protect him. And I don't think that's the case. I think they had a lot of confidence in J.J. They just like to play the way they want to play. And that was, hey, man, if we only need you to throw the ball 15 times, that's fine. But it makes it a hard evaluation. I think he's going to be a guy who is going to be polarizing. He has been polarizing throughout the draft process. I think he's going to be polarizing on draft night, because if he ends up in the top 10 like you have him, I think a lot of people are going to be like, what is going on here? And I could envision a career for J.J. McCarthy where we're just debating 5, 7, 8 years from now. Is this guy good? he's one of these guys who's starting job, plays well, maybe makes a Pro Bowl or two, but everybody's still like, hey, can you give J.J. McCarthy an extension? It's like I just feel like he's going to be one of those guys. What I want to ask you about, though, is a New England Patriots team making picks without Bill Belichick. Because we talked about this, I remember last year, this idea of like, hey, it's not just what team is picking and where, like, what's the dynamic in that room as far as who has the power? What's the power dynamic at New England now? Can we expect the Patriots to sort of take the Patriot way going forward?
Yeah, and that's what's interesting now, is that the Patriots are moving into this new era without Bill Belichick, whose last several drafts weren't all that successful. Mac Jones wasn't a hit for them, although for 1 year he took them to the playoffs. But this isn't going to be. I believe they still follow the Patriot way, the do your job, the team above all else. Everything trickles down from top to bottom to that philosophy of sacrifice and nobody's bigger than the team. All of that stuff, I believe, will continue to carry on in New England. But now you don't have Bill Belichick with the final say in the room. And I just think, Ralph, this one would be such a juicy storyline that they trade down out of 3. They move up. They go down to 11. Then they move up to 8, and they get a Michigan quarterback in J.J. McCarthy. And we all know about the success they had with a Michigan quarterback named Tom Brady, who, by the way, they got in the 6th round. They didn't have to make any deals and nobody wanted him. So I don't feel J.J. McCarthy, we've talked about this, is not a top 5 pick, but maybe you can justify it at 8, especially if you're the Patriots and you got an extra first rounder now out of this deal, another number 1 pick in 23 if they make this move with the Vikings and then come back up there. And then he wouldn't have to start right away either. They got a veteran quarterback in Jacoby Brissett. He's back in New England, and he can kind of be that bridge, and they can give J.J. McCarthy an opportunity to learn his way through the NFL. And if he only had a fraction of the success that Tom Brady had, I think they'll go for that. What would be a fraction of 6 Super Bowls? One?
Yeah,
you get one ring. You get 1/6 of the championships. I think that would be successful. It's like you said, he's so polarizing. I remember last year, Will Levis, close to draft day, remember CJ Stroud and the S2 cognition test or whatever the heck it's called? Some people had Levis being the second quarterback taken behind Bryce Young, and he slipped out of the first round and was the first pick of the 2nd round. Now, I don't think J.J. McCarthy is going to, like, his stock has been on the rise and he can be the number 2 quarterback taken, according to some draft analyst. I think he can also have the potential to fall like Levis did and fall out of the top 20, out of the top 25. I don't think he'll fall out of the first round, but there's such a need for QBs, as we talked about. I plugged him into the top 10 at number 8 to the Patriots.
Yeah, what I love about your mock draft is you definitely are a storyteller, Rob. I can definitely tell you're like looking for some storylines here. And again, like, a guy like JJ, again, a polarizing prospect, so to speak, and a guy we all know because he just led a national championship team, the Michigan quarterback angle, and putting him on a team like the Patriots, a really high profile team in the middle of maybe the most fascinating rebuild we've ever seen, because they've gone from dynasty to like the chain. This is the bridge from the dynasty, right? So there's a lot of pressure on the Patriots right now. So I love the storyline of putting JJ in that position, because, oh my God, would it be amazing if he did become the big star and all of a sudden, you know, after just a short time out of the spotlight, New England is back among the contenders with another Michigan quarterback. We'll roll through a little more quickly here. I do want to stop on one. So the first defensive player you have off the board is a guy who I think will be the first defensive player off the board, and that's Dallas Turner. He's an edge rusher from the from Bama, going to the Chicago Bears, who have already bulked up on the offensive side. Now, this one, from your fingers typed out to God's ears, the New York Jets getting Brock Bowers. The Jets have a fair amount of needs on the offensive line. They could probably use another receiver to go with Wilson. My Jets fandom is pouring through here. I think Brock Bowers is the guy who, you know how like Micah Parsons went 11 a couple of years ago, and now we look back and like, that guy's probably the best player in this. I think there's a possibility within a couple of years we look back and go, man, Bowers might have been the best player in this draft. And it looks like it's going to be a pretty good draft, and it's going to be hard, especially with Harrison there. But I think there's a chance Bowers could be the best player in this draft. I know he's not the biggest tight end, and I think that dings him a little bit in the NFL's eyes. But, man, this guy is an unbelievable playmaker.
Yeah, and what's crazy is my first draft, my first edition of this, I had him out of the first round because there was a little bit of talk around the combine about his ankle injury and some concern there and some thought about, and obviously a lot of teams don't put that kind of emphasis on a tight end in the first round. So I had him slipping, but I was like, he's not going to fall past 11 really. And the Bears could snatch him up at number 9. That's also a possibility if they wanted to go offense, but the Jets kind of addressed their offensive line in free agency. They got their window to win right now, as you know, is immediate with Rodgers. You don't know how much longer he's going to be there, how healthy he's going to be. So if you bring in veterans to stack that offensive line, you need a playmaker. You bring in a guy like Brock Bowers. The only way I think they get a receiver at 10 is if one of those three somehow were to fall, right? Mm-hmm. If Adunze, Neighbors, or Harrison somehow were there at 10, I don't anticipate that happening. But they bring in Brock Bowers, and he could be Aaron Rodgers' best friend immediately. Tight ends are those guys who can get 80 to 100 passes, catches in their first season with a QB like Aaron Rodgers. So I think it's just a perfect fit.
Okay, so I'm just going to stop on a couple interesting teams where you have trades. So you have the Falcons taking Quinyon Mitchell, the cornerback from Toledo at number 11. That's sort of the fallout from that trade, that mock trade you made. And the Falcons need defensive help. So I'm with you on that. I think that the way the draft lays out, the better players are probably the offensive players. So if you are a team like the Falcons and you need defense, yeah, just move down a little bit and you'll get your defensive help a little later and maybe get a couple more picks. I do want to stop on the Eagles and I want to stop on the Cowboys. You have them both making trades. You know, the Eagles are in such a fascinating position, Rob, and you used to cover the Eagles full time, man, like, for AP. So, you know, that team and you know, that city really, really well. This was just the Super Bowl team. In fact, 10 games into last season, they looked like they were like the team that was going to repeat as Super Bowl champions. And then it goes completely off the rails. You have them taking J.C. Latham, an offensive tackle from Alabama. But I guess what I sort of wanted to ask you is, you know, again, like, what's the deal with the Eagles right now? Like, they're not really rebuilding. Could we see them make a huge bounce back and go, you know, from what the hell happened to them at the end of last year to all of a sudden they are a serious Super Bowl contender again?
Yeah, I think so. I think you look at the landscape of the NFC East and you start there and the moves that the Eagles have made in free agency, bringing in Saquon Barkley, that's a win right now kind of move, bringing back C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Now, they did trade Hassan Reddick to the Jets, to your Jets, and he's going to be a tremendous addition for them. But this is a team that has to continue in that window to win right now. And they got talent around Jalen Hurts. They got playmakers at wide receiver, Devontae Smith, A.J. Brown. They got a tight end in Dallas Goedert. They bring in Barkley, and I think their offense is loaded, but they've always valued offensive linemen, Ralph, and they lose Jason Kelce, the all-world, all-pro, future Hall of Fame center, and Lane Johnson, a right tackle, is a guy who is towards the end of his career, you would say, potentially. So it's not going to be a popular pick if they move up from 22 to 12 to take an offensive lineman, but it's a Howie Roseman type deal. He's known for being aggressive. They are constantly looking to move up. And Dallas hasn't done anything in free agency, the Cowboys, and in the offseason to really take that next step up after being a failure in the postseason. So I see that the division's there for the Eagles. They got a shot, but this is kind of a pick where it's for, all right, J.C. Latham, we could plug him in probably at right guard, but he's a tackle. Eventually, he could play either side, but Jordan Mailata is there at the left side. We'll take the guy who's going to potentially be a all-pro pro bowler 5-6 times in his career, and they move up for him while they're also looking to the present, looking at the future.
Gotcha. Okay, we're going to hit the Cowboys at number 20. You have them trading up there in a mock trade with Pittsburgh to get Talese Fuaga, the offensive tackle. Again, there's a ton of good offensive tackles in this draft. And again, the Cowboys, it's sort of, you know, it's always win now with the Cowboys. How does that fit for them on the offensive line? You know, the Cowboys for years seem to have like one of the best offensive lines in the league, but, you know, things change quickly in the NFL. And all of a sudden that guy you thought was, you know, a perennial Pro Bowler is all of a sudden looking like a guy who maybe needs to retire.
Yeah, and they lost a couple starters. They lost their center, Tyler Biadasz, and they lose Tyron Smith to the Jets, but they didn't really want to bring him back, and they're looking in other directions. So you lose two starters on the offensive line. You got to bring in, and they need a running back. They lost Tony Pollard, so they don't have a running back. They can use help at wide receiver too. So to move up from 24 to 20 and take another lineman, he would step in right away, Fuaga, and he would play either he could play either tackle spot. He's a guy who could be a strong run blocker, pass protector for Dak Prescott. They got to solidify up front for Dak and for that team. So that's why I got the Cowboys moving up from 24 to 20, and then the Steelers going back from 20 to 20. It's not much of a trade when you're going 20 to 24. You don't have to add all kinds of value picks and all that. And I still got the Steelers taking another offensive lineman in a Faitanu, who's versatile and can play tackler and fill a need at guard if they have it. So both teams getting an offensive lineman. I just think that the Cowboys need to take the most impactful immediate starter that they can find.
Yeah, Rob's got 10 offensive linemen going in the first round.
Is it 10? Did I end up with 10?
Yeah, I just counted them up. It's 10. And frankly, like, I could see it, man. Like, there's a lot of really good offensive linemen. This will be known as the offensive lineman draft. Last one for you. Again, you'll be able to read all of them. I'll post the link in the show notes for all Rob's mock draft. His entire 3.0 mock draft. The last one I wanted to sit on, though, was Michael Penix, the Washington quarterback.
Yes.
You know, that would make 5 quarterbacks in the first round. You have him slipping in at number 30 to the Broncos after the Broncos trade make some maneuvers. Obviously, the Broncos are in need of a quarterback of the future with Russell Wilson having been traded. So this is Sean Payton's guy, you think?
Well, yeah, and this would be wild for the Broncos to go from 12 to 22, and then from 22, I actually have them going to 32, and then from 32 moving up to 30. So they're wheeling and dealing. I just thought it was really – and they're a team kind of like the Patriots. Need a quarterback, but they don't have a lot of picks because they made that massive deal for Russell Wilson 2 years ago. And they're just a bad football team and need a lot of improvement. So if you can accumulate more draft capital, the more early round picks, day one and day two picks that you can get, the better chance you have of hitting on some of these guys. So it's that, are you going to stay put at 12 and take someone, or will you trade down, add maybe a couple seconds and thirds and whatever else you can do? And I thought it was interesting, Ralph, that Michael Penix said his toughest interview at the combine was Sean Payton and the Denver Broncos because they really were highlighting his bad plays. Mm-hmm. And in that, like Sean Payton, just to do something like, hey, you did a whole lot of good stuff in college. Tell me what you did here on this terrible play. What you do here on this bad one? So I think he would be a guy who can work with Sean and he can kind of he's somewhat of a project, right? We look at Little Michael bit. Penix yeah. as he's got all that talent, but somewhat of a project. So I don't know where he ends up going to the Broncos, whether they get him at a different pick, but I see that as a fit. And the other team is an AFC West division rival of the Broncos. The Raiders could jump up and try and snag him. So I got Penix and Sean Payton. That marriage could be really fun to watch and see how that works out for the Broncos.
The draft starts. The first round is April 25th. There's going to be a lot of wide receivers, a lot of offensive linemen. Rob Motti covers the NFL and does an amazing job doing it for the Associated Press, my colleague, my pal. Hey, man, I very much appreciate you doing this. Good luck next week. I know it's a super busy time. I know you'll give us the best coverage in the business. And again, safe travels. And thanks for giving us some insight today on the pod.
Appreciate you, brother. Thank you.
And now three and out. First down. We are recording this on the day the spring transfer portal window opens in college football. As I speak, there have been no bombshells. Most of the activity in this window will likely be players who slipped down the depth charts during spring practice and are looking for better playing opportunities elsewhere. Meanwhile, most teams are in the market for depth players and maybe to fill a few starting holes. If you're hoping your team can land a game changer in the spring, the chances are small, but not nil. Keon Coleman left Michigan State and transferred to Florida State during the spring last year. Now Coleman might be a first-round draft pick. I would be surprised if we don't get at least one or two big fish jumping into the pond unexpectedly over the next 14 days. But the short history of the portal suggests it's not likely to be many. We already know offensive lineman Caden Proctor, a former five-star, is heading back to Alabama after transferring to Iowa during the winter. It'll be hard to find a better player than that on the move, but be on your toes because, you're probably going to get at least one surprise over the next 14 days. Second down. One somewhat surprising player to land in the portal, and he was actually in before the portal window opened because he was grad transfer and can be eligible to play next year at any time, was Penn State receiver Keandre Lambert-Smith. He led the Nittany Lions in catches and yards last season. A player like that ends up in the portal with a lot of questions. Clearly talented, but also clearly not a star-level player. He plays a position that seems to be one of need for Penn State, though they hope portal addition Julian Fleming and a couple of guys returning from injury could push Lambert-Smith into less of a number one receiver role and more maybe of a two or three. That would probably have been ideal for Penn State coming out of spring. We have limited information on what was going on behind the scenes at Penn State, but we do know this. The Nittany Lions were installing a new offense this spring with Andy Koltelnecki coming over from Kansas. You can certainly see a scenario where Lambert-Smith's role might have been trending into something more of a supporting one. Just to talk in general here, you never know how a player is going to mesh with a new system or a new coach, and frankly, it's one of the reasons why the player should have more freedom of movement in college. In the NFL, if a player, system, coach doesn't fit, the team can cut or trade the player, and if that player is talented, they can find a new job fairly easily elsewhere. That happens all the time. We see odd situations where a coaching change leads to a player who we look at as a pretty good player just simply getting jettisoned because he doesn't fit the new system. That happens in college football too, but for years, players didn't have any recourse, or maybe they would get run off the team and then have limited options as far as finding a place to transfer. Fit is not always a skill set. fit can be personalities too, right? It's not just a matter of, hey, you're not the right nose tackle or the right type of receiver that we need here, but maybe, you know, maybe your personality doesn't really mess with the coach's personality. Maybe the last staff was a little more laid back and the new coach is a little bit more of a hard ass. That happens. This, to me, feels like one of those situations where the fit, whether it was the football fit or the personality fit, wasn't right. Now, we'll find out during the season just how big of a loss this is for Penn State. If Keandre Lambert-Smith goes off and becomes a star receiver for another squad, and there's already some reports that West Virginia, Colorado, Auburn, even Georgia is kicking the tires on him. If he becomes a big breakout star, I'm sure a lot of Penn State fans are going to be shaking their heads wondering why couldn't he be that for us? There's also a possibility where things work out just fine for Penn State and Lambert ends up being a number two receiver somewhere else. And, you know, it gets forgotten about and it all works out fine in the end. But again, we probably won't know the answers to any of those things until we actually see what Penn State and Keandre Lambert-Smith look like in 2024. One thing is for sure, Penn State definitely needs to better support Drew Aller this year than it did last. Third down. Again, if you're looking for potential starters entering the portal, the pickings are going to be kind of slim in general. What you get a lot of in terms of headliners, quote unquote headliners at this time of the year in the portal is former four-star recruits, former blue chippers who have been in college for two, maybe even more, three seasons, maybe even more than that, but with very little production and playing time. I think you can probably salvage a former blue chipper who has had one, maybe 2 years of light playing time, maybe injuries held that player back, or a particularly stacked position room, limited opportunities. You see that happened at the elite recruiting schools, right? Georgia only can find playing time for so many four and five stars. Alabama and Ohio State are like that too. So, of course, a few are going to trickle out because there's just not enough PT to go around between all the blue chippers, and some of those guys will pop. Jameson Williams comes to mind, who transferred from Ohio State as a wide receiver when they had a stacked room to Alabama and became a first round pick at Alabama. But if you see a tweet about a guy entering the portal who is a junior, former four star, and that's the most notable thing about that player is his recruiting status, that's probably not a solution to your team's problems. That's the show for today. I'd like to thank my producer, John Radcliffe, for making me sound good. You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, just about anywhere you get your pods. Please follow so you do not miss an episode. I'm Ralph Russo, the college football writer with the Associated Press. Thanks for listening and come back for more next week of the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast.